Little Emily biting her sister, or is teenage Barry refusing to help around the house? Consulting psychologist David Carey joins us to answer all your parenting woes.
Now, David Carey, child psychologist and dean at the College of Progressive Education, joins me now to go through some of your questions you sent in for the parenting slot. As ever, do text or email your questions to afternoon@newstalk.ie or text 53106. If we don't get to them today, we'll hold them over for next week. David, how are you today?
I'm good, Tom. Very good indeed.
Are you wondering why we're talking about sticks?
Yes.
Yeah, the National Trust has listed 50 things for children to do before they are 11 3/4, which is a very precise
Where
age.
Where does the 3/4 come
I
from?
I don't know. All I'm thinking is I have 1 3/4 for one particular child
to
achieve 50 things. Yeah. One is playing with sticks, climb a tree, roll down a really big hill, camp out in the wild, build a den, skim a stone, run around in the rain, fly a kite, catch a fish with a net.
There's
all very outdoor-y.
Well, it's very interesting because there are some neuroscientists who are actually speculating that the lack of freedom children have to explore the world around them is changing brain growth and neuron development, and actually in some way, perhaps in the future, inhibiting them from being as clever and insightful and intelligent as they might be.
I've been thinking about this at the moment a lot because the kids are off. What do you do with them? Is one of the great questions. And I'm increasingly convinced that in the past, my parents just would have opened the doors.
Yeah.
It was as simple as that.
That's exactly how I was reared, of course. But we really can't do that anymore, actually. The world is much too busy and in some ways unsafe. And by unsafe, I don't mean stranger danger. I mean vehicular traffic and cyclists, et cetera, particularly if you live in the urban areas. So it isn't quite as simple as that. But we do know this. Children who are allowed to do things such as roll down a hill are actually laying a foundation in their brain for something that they will study much later on in secondary school, physics and the concept of gravity.
Wow.
So exploration of the world playfully in the outdoors, and that includes the schoolyard, by the way, is really important in developing, particularly in younger children, the foundations upon which mathematics and literacy will be developed.
Well, my plan is to bring this home, and if not necessarily tick off everyone as I go through it, tick off as many as I can.
Excellent idea.
Some of the ones we've got, poo sticks is great fun.
Can you actually, have you ticked them all off yourself, by the way?
That's a good question.
For you.
I don't really know if I have. I played Conkers, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Eat an apple, strikes from a tree, stolen an apple from a tree. And
well done. No well less. Done. You're up there with Augustine. Yeah.
When I was growing up, it was just part of the deal. Set up a snail race. Yeah, done that as well. Jumped over waves. Yeah. Picked blackberries only last week.
Very good.
Explored inside a tree. That's quite a big one, isn't it?
That's a difficult one. Better get yourself up to the Phoenix Park.
Yeah, I wouldn't have that kind of options. But hunt for bugs? Yeah. Hold a scary beast?
Ooh.
I have as an adult.
We'll save that for another show, Tom.
Yes. I came out a bit differently than I imagined
indeed.
It would. I better throw some questions at you here, Dave.
Yes.
First one, my 5-year-old daughter has a very limited diet, pasta, a vegetable-packed sauce I make for it, fruit, toast and milk, and that's it. I'm told on the one hand to leave her be, as she has a healthy but very limited diet. Others say make her taste new foods. What should I do? Her two younger brothers eat everything.
Well, I can tell you what not to do. Don't try to force her to eat strange foods because you won't get anywhere that way. Have a variety of foods available, including the ones she likes and including the ones that brothers like. Make them look attractive. If you want her to eat, for example, some fruits that she doesn't particularly like, why not make pancakes and decorate it into a face using bits and pieces of the fruit she doesn't like? There's lots of ways to work around this. Never really get worried when children are described like this. It's a reasonably healthy diet. If the GP says the growth pattern and overall physical development is fine, if teachers aren't raising any concerns about the learning profile, you really don't have much to worry about. Lots of people are finicky eaters even as adults. Grow up to be healthy.
Yeah. Does a time come when the child's natural curiosity, or what happens? Do they just start?
Well, it's interesting. Sometimes the body itself takes over. There was a very interesting experiment, research done in the States many years ago in what we call a junior school, middle high school. So we have like 12 to 14-year-olds. And they just decided to, let's do an experiment. We'll have one table loaded with sweets and bars and all that kind of stuff that we don't want children to eat. And we'll have another big table with the healthy options. And it's free grazing for the youngsters. First several days, maybe 4 or 5 days, gravitated toward the sweet table. Later on, the very vast majority of them gravitated toward the quote-unquote healthy diet table. The body takes over. It demands certain nutrients, and 9 times out of 10, the body is listened to intuitively. So, for example, when we're lethargic and feeling like we're falling asleep at the desk, we crave a stimulant of some kind. For most adults, that's a cup of tea or coffee or a bar, something like that. If we're feeling very anxious and upset and nervous and worried, sometimes we crave milk or dairy products. These are nature's chemicals that stimulate the body system in different ways. Don't worry about children like this. 5 years of age, limited diet, but healthy. Have a variety of foods available. No problem.
Excellent. Question number 2 comes for you. My 16-year-old son has a girlfriend, and he is turning out to be controlling and possessive. How can I help him see that this is wrong? He has turned away from his friends, and so has she. I am worried about them. Thank you for the advice.
I think you need to talk to your son about being respectful of women in general, and his girlfriend in particular. A controlling and possessive individual in a relationship will destroy the relationship. So we have a couple of options here. Say nothing and she'll eventually leave him, because people don't like to be treated that way unless they have somewhat masochistic personality traits, in which case they seek out someone who may be controlling and possessive. I think this is a young man who needs to learn how to be a young man and treat a woman properly. And maybe dad needs, if there is one, or an older brother or an uncle or something, to step in and have a little bit of a common sense talk that we don't treat women this way. We don't deeply mistrust the women in our lives. It's just not good. It's going to end up in tears for him. It's not a good way for him to learn how to be a part of a relationship. It's not healthy.
Would somebody have those kind of traits already at 16?
Human personality isn't really fully formed until the later teens. But yes, it's possible.
Okay. Could you ask David, should my 10-year-old daughter be watching? Now, this is a very powerful one, I think, at the moment. Because the moment the news
sure
is not good. Should my 10-year-old daughter be watching the news? I keep turning it off when the terrorist attacks are covered. But of course she has questions and she wants to know more. How should I approach this topic?
Yeah, I often ask myself, should I be watching the news?
Yes.
Should I be reading all this negativity and horror in the newspaper? Of course, we need to be informed, and so does a 10-year-old. Now, she's curious about this and wants to know more. That's probably a good thing, and you can answer her questions just as they've asked. Literally, stick to the facts. Answer the question that she has asked. Do not go beyond the question. Should she be watching the news? Well, that's a difficult one. It's a family decision.
Hard to avoid.
Almost impossible, because these things inevitably will be discussed in school once school starts, because the vast majority of children will be cognizant of them and aware of them. So she'll hear about it on the streets. She may feel a bit worn down if she's completely out of the loop. At age 10, her world is expanding, her mind is expanding. And I think probably all things considered, no harm done in watching the news. You might want to filter out some of the more grisly aspects. And the news media now is very good at saying some viewers may find this upsetting. In that case, turn that bit off and censor a little bit, and then keep open communication with the child and answer questions as they arise.
How truthfully are you going to answer those questions? Because I did recently have one of ours stumble in on one of the terrorist atrocities. I think it was the Bataclan back in November.
Yeah.
And I could sense on her the utter look of confusion on her face as to why would this man be shooting those people?
Mm.
And is he killing them? Is he actually killing them? Because there's so much for it to take on board there that they're actually dying. These people are really dying.
Yeah.
And why is he doing this? They're hard questions to answer.
Well, they're very hard questions, because we don't have a firm answer for that as adults. I think in a child's mind, we probably just want to instill that sometimes people do very, very bad things that hurt other people. And we don't just fully understand why that happens. It's a sad part of the reality of the world, and you can probably leave it there. I would say talk about the behavior. Let's not leave label the individual as horrible or bad, because that gets us into very muddy waters in all our minds. There isn't an answer, is there, Tom?
No, there isn't.
I mean, I don't know fully. Do you?
No, we
have suppositions.
Well, you can't keep them away from it completely, can you?
You cannot, and I don't think that's necessarily a good thing.
Okay.
The joys and sorrows of the world will come to our children anyway. When the communication is open and honest between parents and children, it solves most of their worries and anxieties.
David Carey, child psychologist and dean of the College of Progressive Education, is with me going through some of your parenting queries. 53106 is the text number if you want to send one in. This is the latest one for you now. We have a 2-year-old, and the issue is it can be hard to get him to go into his cot sometimes. The issue is when he wakes up during his sleep, he will cry and even screech at times till we either take him out and put him in his buggy or lie on the floor in the room to get him back to sleep. We did not make the mistake of putting him in our bed, but I think we may have slipped up by letting him go to sleep sometimes in his buggy downstairs till he settled, and now he seems to like the buggy better. We've tried going in and out and settling him every 10 minutes or so, but this can go on for an hour or more. Meanwhile, the other kids get woken up, so everyone is fed up at this stage. A lot of the time we just give in and we sleep on the mat in his room, or take him in his buggy downstairs and sleep on a couch. We are moving to a new house in a new country soon. We're thinking of transitioning him to a child's bed then and leaving the cot. Would that be a good opportunity to sort this out? Any guidance on this to approach would be greatly appreciated. I'd say it would be.
Sorry, that is a good opportunity to sort this out. You have a new start. It doesn't matter that it's a new country. For a 2-year-old, it's a new place. And so it's going to be a golden opportunity to correct the mistakes you have made. Doing the right thing for our children means not giving in to them all of the time. And this young fellow has learned to demand to be taken out of the cot, put in that buggy, or have a parent, if not both parents, prone on the floor whilst he's asleep. And of course, every child wants to be closest to the warmth of the sun. And the sun, of course, is either parent or both parents. Those are the little mistakes that were made. Fortunately, you've got this great opportunity now to correct them. And probably you won't have the kind of torment that will ensue if you try to correct them in the family home right now, because he's totally accustomed to what you've been doing. And you said it yourself, the two magic words, giving in. We have given in. I would suggest to parents, don't give in to the children.
Hard not to.
Oh, yeah. Whoever said it was going to be easy? We don't think about that before we're actually having them in our arms.
The extent of how difficult it can be testing.
It can mean many sleepless nights and a lot of aggravation. And if you have a parenting partner, you really have to switch hit a little bit there and give one another a spell of some rest while you go try to soothe and quiet the child. But I think moving, great opportunity. This came up a couple of weeks ago, actually. Same question, similar anyway, only the parents were moving to a new house, not a new house in a new country. So you've got a chance here.
Yeah, there'd be probably many people, I'd say, who don't have that chance but have similar problems where they've kind of lost a war in a way, and they have, like in this situation, him asleep in the buggy and them asleep on the floor. That's a vision of hell.
Absolutely. That's not good. That's
not good at all for anybody.
It's not good for the parents. And most in particular, this will erode the relationship between the parents and that child if this continues indefinitely. Parents will become highly stressed, tired, annoyed, irritated, etc., and see the child in a different way. And that's the most damaging thing that could ever possibly happen.
So I'm just thinking, for those who don't have that little, you know, move of country coming up soon, they're going to have to really face down the child, really, aren't they? No matter what kind of hell breaks out in the house.
And there's a way to do it, and you do it gradually and sequentially over a period of many, many nights, and it usually works. You gradually remove the amount of time you're there in the direct proximity of the child, and you move back further and further geographically from the child. There's lots of ways to do that. You can look it up on the internet, that's for sure. There are, of course, our sleep coaches out there, and we have a couple of very excellent ones here in Dublin. You can find them by just going on old Professor Google and look for one. But if you want to do it here, you're in for a long battle.
We had one of those sleep coaches. It's many years ago now.
Did you?
But I remember when she came to the door, she rang the bell. It was raining out, raining like cats and dogs. And the moment she rang the bell, the child started to cry. It was like The Exorcist. It was like Merrin. got roared down the stairs. And the sleep doctor has come to sort you out. And sorted out she was.
As long as she didn't look like Max von Sydow, you know, at the time, it's all right.
No. Where is the child? It's, my son is 9 and is mad into superheroes. He has seen the movies, has all the action figures and the colouring books. He's just obsessed with it. He now thinks that some of the storylines are real and he's worried about the world ending. I know it's pure fancy with him, and I talk to him in reality versus these movies, but I'm worried he's not getting a full grip on what's real. Any advice, please?
Well, I would cut down on the amount of superhero movies he's watching as a first cut here. That's just kind of pragmatic. I'm sure he does know the difference between fantasy and reality. The more you talk about the difference with him and the more time you spend with him, the more he's going to want you to be talking about it. So generally speaking, 99 out of 100 times, this is not a sign of any kind of disturbance in the child's cognition. They know what's going on. Maybe he's just too young to be watching some of these movies. I mean, you know, we have guidelines around movies, the age at which children should be watching them. They tell us nothing because no 2 9-year-olds are exactly alike developmentally or cognitively or emotionally or socially. You have to really know your child and you have to be able to read your child. I've said this before. Your child is your textbook, not some parenting book. Your child is the book. Read the child and follow the child. The very first time this boy seemed to begin to be confused was the time to stop watching those movies.
We have seen that up close and personal, and I have to say, well, she was 9. Harry Potter movies, no trouble to her whatsoever. No right. Fear of those. The other one, 8, hiding under a bed. Had to be kept completely away from that and continues that way. It's the child, you're right.
And it's developmental. And yeah. Since no two are, there is no substantive difference between an 8 and a 9-year-old. If you look at developmental charts, they're probably clustered pretty close together. So you get the characteristics for 8 and 9-year-olds, which are basically the same, generally speaking, spread throughout the entire population of 8 and 9-year-olds. But no 2 8s are alike. No 2 9s are alike. And you just gave a brilliant example of that. They're both clustered around the same developmental level, but completely different in terms of emotional ability to tolerate the images and the sounds that they're seeing on the screen.
And they've been that different from day one. 53106 for your text, by the way, if you have a question for David or a comment even. My 4-year-old has a problem with wearing shoes. She hates wearing them and always has. She's forever kicking them off when we're out in restaurants or when we're in parks and refuses to put them back on. She would throw tantrums and scream when we put them onto her. She rarely wears any shoes or slippers when in the house. I try to explain the ground is dirty and she needs them, that they protect her feet, but she doesn't care, or perhaps she doesn't understand. I also make a big deal of buying shoes and I make it a special day for her. How can I convince her that wearing shoes is a necessity? There's a challenge for you now, David.
Yeah, I'd like to know a little bit more about this 4-year-old, because there is a possibility that she has some sensory integration issues which need sorting. So I'd be wondering if she's as sensitive or gets as irritated about the feel of other fabrics in terms of clothing, or the sense of different laundry detergents, or fabric softeners, etc. Or is she disturbed by very loud and sudden noises and seems to need to cover her ears and scream? There is a condition of childhood called sensory integration disorder, and it's often characterized by children absolutely refusing to wear shoes. I don't have enough info to make a definitive answer. If you really want to find out, 1, talk to your GP, because he can help you do some developmental screening. 2, you may want to speak to an occupational therapist who has some specialization in sensory integration issues. And 3, I think you might want to have her feet looked at. Is she very flat-footed? Mm. In which case, walking in shoes may be very uncomfortable for her. Now, your GP can help you sort some of that out.
Right. When I saw that one first, it put the fear of God into me and brought me back to a moment which I will remember for the rest of my life.
Oh, my God.
A shoe shop in Terranure, first time trying to get one of the 2-year-old shoes. And once again, the Exorcist story came into play.
Same child, by the way?
Same child, yeah. Okay, strangely enough, right, strange child. Recurring theme there.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, Tom.
I'll bring her in with me next time.
Delighted.
Might be the easy thing to do. Yeah. David, thank you very much for that. Pleasure,
my pleasure,
as always. Some text coming in for you, David. The phrase, "we didn't make the mistake of putting him into our bed," absolutely infuriates me. Both of our kids slept in our bed until 2.5 years old and provided for mutually beneficial sleeping arrangements. My wife was breastfeeding our kids. Sometimes it seems like kids sleeping in your bed for 2 years is some form of hell. Definitely not in our house. Chris and Kevin saying that.
Glad it worked well for you, Chris.
You're leaving. I know others who will tell stories of it being a living hell and never getting a good night's sleep. And that, you know, if they only stayed for 2 years, that seems to be a good thing.
That's a very good thing. And that's why I'm happy it worked well for Chris. Right.
And age for TV programs does not work in some cases. I was watching Cops, the American fly on the wall police program, since I was 5. I'm 29 now. Lol. Yeah, some variances.
Time to change the station.
I think so. David, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Coming up next, treating phobias with tapping.
Listen in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. here on Moncrief for more parenting advice from David Carey.